Today's show, sort of an emergency pod. Dan Hurley staying at UConn. And Caitlin Clark is not going to the Olympics. It's reaction time.
Time now for the College Basketball Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
They practice in a bingo hall.
Ross Gellinger.
Dan, are we sure we should be doing this?
And SI's Pat Forney.
The best player's 40 years old. He wants you to draft his G League son.
Here's Pat, Ross, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. And we have a sort of emergency, We got a log jam of podcasts here. We've got another one that's more about football. It'll be out Tuesday. Then we got this Dan Hurley soap opera. We got Caitlin. We got all this stuff going on. So we're doing this one. Then you get another one.
We're here for you, the listener. Emergency or otherwise.
When something's happening, we're here for you. Unless we're not, because we're busy doing something else. But right now, you got us. So here we go. Dan Hurley. UConn Huskies. He ain't leaving. Looked at the LA Lakers. They offer him the head coaching job. They offer him $70 million. They offer him the keys to the prestigious 17 NBA championships, franchise of Kobe and Shaq and Kareem and Magic and Mike and all of it, Showtime. And he says, no, I'm going to stay at UConn. It's not like he's going to be poor there. But he loves the foliage, maybe. I don't know. Loves the East Coast. He wants to coach UConn. They've got a chance at an historic three-peat next year. Won the last two. They could have absolutely won it this year. Hasn't been done since John Wooden. Only other time it's been done. Nobody has been better in the era of the transfer portal and NIL than Dan Hurley. Nobody is better at building two consecutive teams. Fascinating guy. Total character. Love him, hate him. He's fiery. He's crazy. He's everything that college sports needs. Obviously, this is a great day for the University of Connecticut. You had to think you were going to lose your coach. And I know Connecticut will win with multiple coaches. You don't want to lose Dan Hurley. This is a great day for college basketball as well because Dan Hurley is still in it. Pat, start with you before we get to Ross. Thoughts?
Yeah, a lot of thoughts. I think this is the right move for Dan Hurley. There are a lot of people, and I've said, I think this is a significant thing for college basketball and college sports. If he had left, it wouldn't necessarily say that the end times are upon college athletics. I don't believe that, but I think that if he had left, it would be at least partially a protest vote over the way things are. He killed the portal, but he didn't like the portal. Didn't like operating in the portal. It did not really appeal to his old school sense of how you build teams and how you coach teams. He said as much multiple times during this NCAA tournament. This was different than all the basketball coaches who retired. They were old, right? Krzyzewski, Boeheim, Williams, they were old. Nick Saban. No, this is different. Saban was old. Jim Harbaugh, different. Jim Harbaugh won national championship and left for the pros, but he was a pro guy. He'd already had success in the pros. He also had an NCAA thing he might have wanted to get away from. So Dan Hurley had none of those things. Dan Hurley is 51 at the top of the game, back-to-back championships, still rolling. Billy Donovan had stopped winning titles when he left. Brad Stevens, as great as he was when he went to the NBA, he was at Butler, and he had struggled even at, you get Gordon Hayward, but you can't get Gordon Hayward every year at Butler. Maybe if he had stayed, he could have eventually gotten those guys, but I saw him miss on Cody Zeller, who went to Indiana, and he really wanted Cody Zeller. So I think there are reasons that those other situations are different than Dan Hurley's situation. He would have been walking away from the top of the game right here, right now. And he would have been going to a Lakers franchise that is the Lakers. Absolutely. And everybody's going to listen to the Lakers. But the best player is 40 years old and he wants you to draft his G League son. Okay? You got to deal with
that.
That's not an easy situation. So You know, and then Hurley being total East Coast guy. He's never worked west of New Jersey. Going to go to Los Angeles? Okay. And then the personality. 82 games for that personality? Losing 35 of them? Oh, no. No, no. He wouldn't have lasted. Fighting with fans in the first row, that sort of thing. There's just the way he's wired, I just don't think currently plays well with an NBA mindset of coaches. So for a lot of reasons, I think this is the right move for Dan Hurley to stay at UConn, and it's a really good thing for college basketball.
Yeah, and I think the biggest point is that what Pat mentioned is Dan Hurley just doesn't make sense, and his style doesn't make sense in the NBA in coaching pro players. I guess down the line it may happen eventually after you win so many college championships. If he wins, you know, more, maybe he gives a shot down the line, but he seems to be a better fit in college basketball. Just his demeanor in general and in his coaching style. You know, I don't know what it says about the college sports landscape, his decision. I mean, all these decisions are individual moves, and I know a lot of the moves lately have been tied. A lot of the moves from coaches either retiring or going to professional sports, football, basketball, whatever, have been tied to the landscape of college sports and the changing environment with athlete compensation and transfer portal and kind of the uncertainty. It's a very ambiguous time. And so, you know, from an AD standpoint too, we've seen a lot of ADs retire or move on in some way. And a lot of it's been tied to everything. And then you see somebody who decides not to do it, who could have done it and could have gone to a pretty prestigious place with, you know, a lot for a lot of money. And to turn that down and to stay in this, quote, chaotic world is probably at least proves that, you know, maybe it's not quite chaotic and you can live in this world and have success in this world of college athletics, but it is changing. And Dan Hurley just strikes me as somebody who, you know, is gonna evolve and change in order to win, do anything to win sort of thing, right? And that he's gonna evolve and change in this world as he's done the last few years with putting together teams. Kind of like he has.
Yeah, I think, you know, it would have been tough to see him go. It was tough when Brad Stevens left. Jay Wright is the one guy who left off that list, Pat, that I think was disappointing. Yeah, yeah. But at the same time, Jay was maybe 60.
He was 60,
you know,
yes.
So, and he was such a class, you know, just a good presence for the game. Brad Stevens leaving and you know, as much as they talk about NIL, like one of Brad Stevens' motivations for leaving was he didn't want to deal with AAU and Nike and Adidas and those, like, you know, college coaches complained a lot before NIL. Yep. You know, the whole idea,
they have always
complained. Yeah. It is in the DNA of coaches to complain, to blame others, to make excuses, and to woe is me. And so there was a lot of reasons why coaches wanted to get to the NBA, is to get away from all this stuff. Like, I have to, you know, I should be on vacation with my kids, and instead I have to return a phone call from an assistant JUCO coach somewhere because he might have a player next year, or all that stuff. So it's never been good in college athletics. And the nature of paying and compensating players have driven lots of good people out of college athletics. I remember talking to a guy who was a scout. He used to be this college assistant, later became a scout and then a fairly high in an organization. And he talked about how much relief he had had when he had gotten out of college athletics because he no longer had to break rules or risk this or go in. It just was so good. So the NIL is certainly part of what's challenging people, but it's always been a challenge. What I liked about Hurley is he doesn't like it. He doesn't like the transfer portal, but he said, I'm not going to get up in my feelings. He just exploited it.
Yeah.
And for UConn basketball, the fact that Nike and Adidas can't control all the talent anymore, that you can build an elite program and talent without the blessing of a multinational corporation stocking your roster is a huge advantage. UConn has a Nike deal, but they've never been the favored nation in recruiting.
Never.
Never were the one that...
It's really one of the most amazing things about their dynasty. You know?
No. But they were never the one that Nike was just throwing all the players to. They were just a Nike school, and they've won and won and won anyway. And so blue blood doesn't matter as much. UConn has won more than these blue bloods lately, but they're still the nouveau rich, I guess. I don't know. I don't really understand the whole blue blood doesn't whatever, man. It's not 2015. It's not 2005 where these kingmakers are just going to send the players wherever you want. Whether it was the FBI scandal or NIL or the transfer portal, you build a team differently, and you're seeing all these different teams now make the Final Four. All these other teams become little, you know, it doesn't mean they're sisters of the poor, but you do see FAU and things like that. But like Alabama's got a heck of a basketball program all of a sudden, you know, Purdue, all these different ones. So it's a different thing. So I kind of feel like Dan Hurley and then his coaching, he took NIL and flipped it. Everyone's scared of the portal. You hear some of these coaches, I can't coach the team anymore. My transfer. This quote, we talked about this quote before, but Dan Hurley talking about the NIL, he said this in April, the last 2 years since NIL started, I've coached my teams harder than I've ever coached any teams just because of everything these guys now have at their disposal. The resources there at the University of Connecticut and programs now invest in these players is not for their attendance. It's not to just be on campus. It's to produce and to produce winning. The way we travel, the residence, the full service dining we have in our $40 million practice facility, the NIL opportunities. He demands a return on the investment from the players. And if they leave after a year because they don't like that demand or it doesn't work, well, it's not seemed to be a problem the last couple of years. I found that to be fascinating. That he actually goes harder.
Absolutely. Yeah. And very candid. I think there's probably a lot of coaches who think that, but not many of them have said it out loud. You know, that, okay, basically, you're being paid to play now, so we're upping the demands on you. So it's an interesting, probably really honest stance that other people are adopting to a degree as well, but he's making it work, that's for sure. And he said it out loud.
Well, it's just going to increase too, right? I mean, the next phase of this, direct pay from schools and all that. I mean, and in the next phase, maybe in a straight employment model of some sort. Like at the highest level of college basketball and college football, you know, college athletes are going to be viewed differently starting next year, and maybe already, you know, like Dan Hurley has alluded to, are viewed differently right now in the NIL era. I mean, they are paid, whether you say it's for an appearance to sign autographs or a tweet or two. If you say that, that's fine, but they're paid to play. That's what it is. It's paid to perform. And so in many aspects, they are kind of professional. They just have to go to school as well.
I would say, well, it's like a full-time job being a college athlete, and it is. Now it's a full-time job. It's hundreds, you know, at the Connecticut level, hundreds of thousands of dollars for everybody, and could be more. So I what I've liked about Dan Hurley, besides, like, it's nice to have a character. I mean, someone's going to win the national title, whether he's the coach or not. It's like the sport was going to shut down. But I liked that he just was like, well, this is how we're going to do things. And it hasn't been this full on, you can't do it. You can't coach a team anymore. You can't. Oh boy. this is working for him. And, you know, he doesn't need to run off to the Lakers or anything like that. He had the best opportunity that someone's had. I don't know their, you know, Lakers situation right now might not be perfectly ideal, but it's the Lakers. But he certainly had the best chance since Brad Stevens got the Celtics job. This isn't like he's just turned down the, you know, Hornets or something. He's just going to do it for the money or whatever. So I really like it. It's great for the Big East, which is a basketball first league. And I like that they, you know, UConn is not, this is not a big two, let alone a power two or power four school. And he's not saying I got to get to the Big Ten or I got to get to the SEC. I can't win here at UConn. He's a son of a high school coach. He was a high school coach. You make do with what you have. He was a tough as nails player when he was a high school player and at Seton Hall. He was a high school coach 15 years ago in Newark, Wagner, Rhode Island. Like, he's not focused on what he doesn't have. He's focused on what he does. And as someone who's just kind of tired of the whining and woe is us, I love it.
Yeah. I would like some ACC athletic departments to perhaps hear what he's saying and realize, geez, maybe you can win at a high level without having to have $100 million a year in TV revenue. Now the other point there, like the 6 years, $70 million. Well, look, we all like money and want money, but I don't think he was the son of a probation officer. Grew up in Jersey City. I think he feels like he's got plenty of money now. Brendan Quinn from The Athletic, who knows Dan Hurley very well, had a great lead the other day where he was talking about he was wearing the same suit he had at Wagner for the championship game here for UConn. Like 12 years later, this kind of starting to fray, old, tacky kind of suit. And it's like, you know, hey, it still works for me. You know, he doesn't have to have the stuff, you know, he doesn't have to look like Rick Pitino on the sideline. That's not really in the family DNA, and it's not in Danny Hurley's DNA either. So, you know, he was not going to go for the money. If he's going to go, it's going to be for the opportunity. Maybe at some point the Knicks or somebody who's Northeast gets him to go. You know, Billy Donovan at one point took the Magic job and then backed out and stayed and then eventually did go to the NBA. And so maybe, you know, that he could do something like that. He's always said he's kind of interested in the NBA. So, but this position right now with where he has UConn right now, man, it is such a good deal. It's such a good thing. Keep it rolling.
Speaking of Rick Pitino, I guess he's thrilled because he seemed to tweet earlier Monday that in support of Dan Hurley staying at UConn. So, I guess Rick is happy to continue the competition.
Well,
that was interesting.
The Big East, though, I think they're all, well, I don't know. Some of them might have been ready to see him go because they're losing to him. But the Big East takes a lot of pride in the Big East.
True.
Maybe only the SEC's got more pride. Because these are the basketball schools that were left behind like three different times. And the fact they've won four national titles lately in basketball because they care. UConn's obviously a public school, but it's not, like we said, it's not a Big Ten SEC program flush with cash. It's in the woods of Eastern Connecticut. The rest of them are pretty much Catholic schools that are kind of holding them together. And I don't know. There's something about, I thought it was really interesting that Dan Hurley would go coach the Lakers because if you ever had been at one of his dad's practices and what he played for and what he learned the game at, like St. Anthony's in Jersey City where Bob Hurley coached, it didn't have, the school was so small. It was one building in the middle of a block of Jersey City. It wasn't like a campus. There's one building like four stories tall. It was just this, it was small. And they had to play, they practiced. They had no gym. He won four national titles without a gym. They practice in a bingo hall called the White Eagle Bingo Hall, which is attached to the rectory of the church down the street. And it was 65 feet long. It's supposed to be 94.
Yeah, you're coming up 29 feet short.
The wall was almost out. There was like a bench and whatever. The seating was above, like high, like almost like a second deck. There's no first deck though. And they learned the game in like, I mean, there's no room to cut, pass, box out. I mean, it's just, you're playing in a closet. And so, and they, you know, and it was hardwood floors where like a couple times a year they had to come out with hammers and start re-nailing the nails back in because they like snag your shoe. I mean, this was the most like, it's about it. This is about as base as it gets. Like it's practically Naismith's YMCA in Springfield, Mass, right? And the idea they were going to give the Lakers, he was going to run the Lakers. Like, oh my God. But I think your point, Pat, like, hey, I did all this. I don't need this stuff. And I'm going to be an East Coast guy and I'm going to keep coaching in the Big East. And that's what we're going to do. I think it's terrific for the Big East. I think it's great for, I want people to be successful at a sport where they really care about the sport. That's my general theory, right? It's that anybody can win, but when like sometimes like a football school makes the Final Four and nobody really cares and they're spending their time talking about spring practice anyway, like, is that as exciting as it would mean for a school where basketball is everything? And nowhere is basketball more important than the University of Connecticut.
Yep. And the Big East. That's Pitino going back to the 80s, I think he has some of that real original esprit de corps of that league too. You know, that's wired into
Providence
him.
Guy.
I mean, he almost fought John Thompson on the sideline once. John Thompson, who was like a foot taller than Pitino and 100 pounds
heavier.
Would not
have ended
well.
It
would not have ended well at all. No. But that's, you know, like those are the coaches went at each other, but I do think they respected each other and they enjoyed that element of it. And so I could see Pitino sitting there saying, yeah, I'm pissed I can't beat Danny Hurley, but I want him around so that I can take him down. And because it makes the league better and it's a lot more fun when people like Danny Hurley are in your league.
Well, what Dan's mentioned it a few times, but what is somewhat impressive here about the decision is that he is at UConn, which obviously is a basketball powerhouse, but resources-wise, is nowhere near the top of college athletics. And because of its, as I think Dan mentioned earlier, because of its lack of football success and it being in a big football conference and it getting football TV money, it getting CFP money. I mean, right now, I believe this to be the case. UConn, starting in next year, will be the only independent football team in America outside of Notre Dame, and they're going to be the only one. They're going to get the smallest check from the CFP, which is going to be around $350,000 a year. And for comparison's sake, a normal Group of Five team will get like 1.5 to 2 million a year in CFP check. So now that might change, right? As you might imagine, they're a little hot about that in stores. And so there's some talk of that. Could that change down the line? But they don't get big football money. And still they have this incredible basketball program and in a great base, from what I understand, a great base of NIL in donors ready to contribute to basketball. So it is fascinating that Dan Hurley is staying at a place that doesn't have that big football money, and that infects the whole athletic department and the whole budget. I think their budget is maybe around 75 to 85 million or so, which for comparison's sake, again, like the average power conference budget is around 130, 140 million.
Yeah, but like the spreadsheet didn't win.
No.
He could have been the Kentucky
coach. Usually it does.
He could be the Kentucky coach right now, I'm guessing too, right? Yeah. No offense to Mark Pope. Yeah. But if the two-time national champ wants your job, I'm sure he could have had any job. It normally doesn't. And that's what I love about this. You know what Connecticut does have? Mm-hmm. Players. Not in the state.
Yes.
They have money in the state. It's a very wealthy state. But he has access to Boston, all the New England prep schools, New York City, Jersey, obviously, Philly, DMV, the whole thing in the northeast part of the country. There's tons of talent. They have enough money. At some point, enough money. You talk sometimes, Ross, about do we always have to expand? At some point, it's like we have enough money to get really good players in here, and I'm going to coach them better than you. You know, it's that bit where like Clemson's going, we can't, they're not quite saying this, but I'm going to use Clemson as a say, like, we need to get in a bigger conference. We can't compete. And look at how much money the Big Ten has. That's great. You know what Minnesota or Indiana has? They got a ton of money. You know what Clemson has? Atlanta. They can recruit Atlanta an hour and a half away. You're going to beat them. The money is only so much of a factor. And when you're Dan Hurley and you're Connecticut and you have generations of respect, both your personal brand and your family name and your university up and down the Northeast seaboard, you should be getting great players. And you're putting guys in the league and you're winning national titles, you should be getting players. They have enough money to win. They don't need
they're gonna have two lottery picks later this month. You know?
So it's like, oh, you want to go where the TV money's big or you want to come where you're gonna win and go to the NBA? You're going to get coached by one of the great coaches in the great coaching family. So I love it. It's a whatever it would be, somewhat of a victory for the underdog, if you want to call the five-time national champion. Six? What do they won?
Six-time national.
Poor little UConn. Six. But somehow in college basketball, poor little UConn. Six titles. I mean, I think it's great. I'm happy. Would have been fine if he'd gone. I thought he was going to go, but he did not. All right, we got one more.
I thought the longer this went, this was like letting the guy get out of the car dealership without signing the deal.
Yeah, yeah. You know, when he left L.A., that seemed a little weird. You got to be able to. I mean, this is L.A., baby. Close the deal.
Yeah, always be closing.
Always be closing. He should have, you know, some fancy, you know, little private reception at a Malibu mansion and. Sun goes down, and now he's like, I'm going to get back to White Eagle. I'm going to get back to the bingo hall in Jersey City. Get me out of here. All right, we'll be back right after this. All right, one more thing we want to talk about. We're kind of in this. We didn't want to just do an emergency pod on this. There's a full pod coming tomorrow. It'll have People's Court and all that stuff, but we wanted one other topic we thought we'd just throw out there because why not? Caitlin Clark, kind of the hot topic, hot take. Let's do a hot take. Caitlin Clark didn't.
Dan, are we sure we should be doing this?
Hot take. Caitlin Clark didn't make the Olympic team.
All takes on Caitlin Clark are molten.
They
hot
are.
Now.
People get mad at you. People get mad at you no matter what you're gonna do.
Polarizing issue.
Caitlin Clark. If you think Caitlin Clark should or should not be on the Olympic team, you will be defined and you will be denigrated one way or the other. Unbelievable. The positive is that anyone cares who's on the Olympic team. I don't recall this debate over the 12th member of the last seven. U.S. women's basketball is utterly dominant. They've won 9 of the last 10 gold medals. They've won 7 consecutive without dropping a single game. Pat, both of us have covered a lot of Summer Olympics. I recall writing 3 or 4 women's basketball columns in all of those years. Maybe like once an Olympics, I check in with them on something. Remember when Dawn Staley was the flag bearer, or, you know, Sue Bird. Mm-hmm. I think she was a flag bearer, maybe. I don't know. There's usually something. There's some interest, but not they unless you love lopsided basketball, it's not much. So anyway, Caitlin Clark's doing it. So step in it, Pat. Step in it. Should they have put Caitlin Clark on the Olympic team? Go ahead. Get yourself in trouble somehow.
No.
Good try, Wetzel.
You're dead.
No,
she shouldn't be on the team, or no, you won't do it?
No, she shouldn't be on the team. I will say this. Look.
Hater.
You want to talk about an basically irrelevant argument? They're winning the gold with her, or they're winning it without her? And they're winning it easy with her or without her. So from that standpoint, whatever. But I think I get, you know, yes, the marketing, and she's already doing bang-up work on marketing for the league. It's already, you know, that has been a great energy boost for women's basketball and a profile boost. But you know, the way the WNBA season works, where they take a break in the middle of the season, they do a lot of their, like, camps and pre-work with people that are candidates to make the team in the offseason, like this year, last year, the year before. And you're basically going to take people who have been going to these camps to try to make the Olympic team since 2022 and say, never mind, we got this rookie we want to put on here. So that, I think, would be disrespectful to them. Secondly, again, it's not going to make you win having her. You're already going to win. Her time's going to come. She'll be there in 2028. She may be a star on that team. We'll see. But I think the team is plenty good without her. And I think there are a lot of people who have paid a lot of dues to be on that roster before her, and they should get the spots, and they'll win the gold medal. It's all good. All
right, which side do you want to hate you, Ross? Go ahead.
Yeah, this is going to really shock you. I don't have a strong opinion on this issue. Yeah. But I will say
You a communist? You must have. They just passed a law. You must have an opinion on Caitlin Clark. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. At all times.
Mm-hmm. I'll say this. Pat kind of mentioned it there, but there are a lot of players take, and this is like a 2 to 3 year process, right, to put yourself in position to make the team. And all those other women have gone through that process, and to put a rookie on the team, which I'm sure has happened in the past, but it's pretty unusual, I would think. In the men's side, maybe it's happened more, but it's probably unusual, right? Do we know? Can we think
rookies?
Brianna Stewart
was a rookie, and Diana Taurasi was a rookie. They both made
Taurasi,
it. But Taurasi is a rookie. I think it was like 2004. It was a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And she's still there. All right, so look, I'm fascinated how angry people get over this, one way or the other.
Oh, my God, I am too.
I wrote a column about it.
Like, Caitlin Clark, to her credit, has made people lose their minds.
It is incredible.
On everything.
I don't even understand. I know there are subtext to all of this, okay? And it digs deep into America in all facets, all different ways. I don't recognize all of them, though. Like, I wrote a column on this over the weekend, and I don't know. Like, I try to not read comments and all that, because it's just like, what the heck? My basic premise here is that what I don't want is marketing to be one of the factors in determining worthiness. Whether or not she will grow the game or sell T-shirts or jerseys or more people tune in or whatever, that shouldn't be a factor. Ideally, that shouldn't be a factor. So if you want to argue she's better than Diana Taurasi at this point or something else, have that argument. I'm not going to debate it. They have a 5-person committee. These people know women's basketball very, very well. And they make the committee, that USA Basketball makes the choice. So whatever. I don't know that she's one of the 12. The thing about basketball, it's not like we're building, and Pat, you know, this is like swimming or like a track meet, where it's we can determine who's the fastest, right? This person is faster than this person. It's basketball. It's subjective. And it's not about getting the 12 best of anything, because you might need a role player. You might need your 11th and 12th players to be team players who are fired up to practice hard every day and know they're never getting in the game. You might need experience. You might need leadership. You also might need to say, hey, let's send our rookie, who's probably going to be our captain one day, and let her get some experience at the Olympics when, you know, at this age. And then the next time she's more prepared, because the Olympics can be an overwhelming event. You could come up with anything you want to put Caitlin Clark on the team, and I wouldn't really object to it. It's not like I was going to be like, this is awful, Caitlin Clark's on the team. No, fine. Just be like, hey, this is what we want to do. But generally speaking, I think that the team should be selected based on merit, not marketing. And so the argument that doesn't ring true to me, if you want to argue Caitlin Clark's merit puts her on the team, have at it. I'm not going to argue with that. But if you're arguing that her marketing should overwhelm someone else's merit in the eyes of this committee, I don't like that. I'm not in favor of that as a concept. Now, if that makes me un-American somehow, I don't know what to tell you.
Well, the other thing it does is, it again, it's a little bit insulting to the sport. Like, oh, we have to prop it up with this marketing instead of just sending our best athletes and be treated like a legitimate, straight-up sport, regardless of gender or anything else.
Also, somebody's got to come off the team, right? So you got to make that decision. Yeah. Somebody doesn't go who, you know, is on the team right now, and that's always
not popular enough. Right. You're like, what? Like, I would think most people would be against that. I haven't grasped this concept that somehow you're in. I don't know. I don't believe that they're out to get Caitlin Clark. I have no evidence of this. She is something else. It's funny. I think most people support Caitlin Clark, but they all have different ideas on how you must support Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, right. You know, I mean, it's fascinating. What a Rorschach test for America here to have this super sensationally, you know, like right now red hot athlete that's a female that is just causing these outsized reactions with everything. It's just, it's really, really been interesting to watch and to listen to everybody. Like, the everybody should just kind of almost stop talking about her because nobody can seem to quite figure it out how to get it right. Maybe you us included. Maybe we're blowing it right now. Who knows?
We're drafting off her right here. You kidding me?
Yeah. Well, it's been great for the WNBA. I mean, when's the last time y'all talked about WNBA, right? Like, not much, you know, it's been great attention on
but
them.
People,
I mean,
will say
they're getting
not
columns.
They'll say, you know, no.
Yeah.
You didn't talk about the WNBA 3 years ago, right? Or you need to talk more about this person. They're the steals leader.
What's the old saying? Any attention is good attention, right? Say. Any press is good press. Right. They should lean into that.
You need personalities that elevate interest in the sport. I cover all sports. When Tiger Woods was rolling, I covered every major. Now I don't. When Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao and all those guys, there's a huge group in the kind of that welterweight thing, were rolling, I covered tons of boxing matches. I don't right now. When Conor McGregor is at his peak, you cover a bunch of UFC, NASCAR. Sports come and go based on, and those sports can't create fandom based on city pride. You don't really need personalities. Personalities will occur in the NBA and the NFL, but you don't necessarily need them because someone grew up a Packer fan and they're always going to be a Packer fan. But if you, there aren't a whole lot of people that are just diehard WNBA city. I'm a Washington Mystic fan. Like, you know, that's it. 360. I'm on the Mystic message board. They exist, but they're not in big numbers. So you need somebody to say, hey, and Caitlin Clark is that person. I don't think fans should gatekeep, like, well, you're not a real fan because you weren't here 5 years ago. Or I mean, it's just like, hey,
no, that's counterproductive. And
if you want to enjoy a sport for whatever reason, you want to enjoy the sport, enjoy it. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Welcome them in. Say, hey, thanks for watching.
Now, as a columnist who must go to the Olympics this summer to work, I am not happy with this decision.
Yeah, you would have covered multiple women's
I'm gonna
Olympic
get in trouble now. Why didn't
games?
You cover them anyway? Yeah. Look at Caitlin Clark, Caitlin Page views here.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have been helpful to have. I want as many stars as possible. I cover gymnastics every 4 years. I love covering the gymnastics. I'm really happy Simone Biles is back because she's a superstar.
Yeah.
So I will do.
Yeah, we kind of miss Michael Phelps on the swimming beat.
It's not that you're not excited for the swimming, but hey, having Michael Phelps is a good thing. Yep. So this is how the world works. On matters of taste, the customer is never wrong, is the statement. Most people get rid of the matters of taste part and think the customer is never wrong, like when they punch the waitress or something. Indeed, they are wrong. But anyway.
They should put Livy Dunn on the
gymnastics team.
That would be the ultimate.
Should we? Hashtag page views, huh?
Marketing!
Hey, more people will watch. Like, no. I mean, nothing, you know. I think she was pretty elite for a while when she was younger. But yeah, that kind of is that. I can't get into the concept, and I don't know why people are in favor of the concept where marketing is part of the equation on merit. Like, you want to live your life? And I get it. It's like, it's a Kardashian country, right? But really?
Yeah.
This is what we want? I don't know. Caitlin Clark will be fine. I think probably 3 weeks of rest and chance to unpack.
I mean,
it's a tough go to start your season, a month after your last season.
Yeah.
The pressure and
especially exhaust. Yeah, dragging around the spotlight that she has for that long too. Yeah, if I were her, I would give me 3 weeks of downtime.
Yeah, although she probably wishes she was there. But anyway, all right, that's our pod. Again, Tuesday there will be a football pod with more traditional stuff. But you know, whatever, we did this one. I'm sure is highly entertaining. So. Continue to subscribe, share us on social media. Don't hate us because you think Caitlin Clark should be on the damn team. It's like we're saying she's bad or something. We love Caitlin Clark just like everybody else. Talk to you later.